is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show, coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida, all around the country and all around the world via the World Wide Web. Glad to have all of you with us this afternoon. I'm still nursing that old cold while I was up north, but we'll survive, and we hope you'll enjoy the program today. We hope you'll join the program today by giving us a call toll-free at 866-546-5254, and if you've got unlimited minutes to spend, why, 941-876-6896. Love to have you join us today. We're going to be all over the place today, really. I'm going to be talking a little bit about... Did you watch the Republican debate? I watched it. I try and catch all that good stuff. And by the way, in response to a call I had yesterday and some email I got, and I want to thank everybody for sending me that... I got that Bhutto video with the audio and the interview with David Frost. I don't know what to make of it. Sure as shooting, she did say in there that bin Laden had been killed, but she either misspoke. I think she misspoke, but the big question is, if she did, why didn't David Frost ask her about it? Big mystery right there. I found that more than interesting. Thanks for sending that. Several books we're reading right now and plan on having authors on. Naomi Klein, The Shock Doctrine. What else we got on the... Several books we have going all at the same time right now. I hate to do that. I like to start one and finish it. But no can do lately. Just jammed with books. I do love to read, though, thank goodness. I see the big news is today Obama raised $32 million in January. $32 million Obama raised in January. Not bad, huh? It'll be interesting to see how much Hillary raised in January. But man, oh man, $32 million in 1 month is an incredible amount of money. And also under important things in the news, I see Laura Bush's popularity is down from 70% clear down to 54. Might have something to do with hanging out with that husband of hers, I suppose. I suppose it's something to do with that. What do you think? Edwards voters. Interesting. Where are the Edward voters going to go? If you were an Edwards supporter, where are you headed with your vote now? Are you going to go with Hillary? Are you going to go with Obama? God forbid, are you going to vote for McCain or Romney? I don't know. Interesting to see what happens to the Edwards folks. I can see them splitting two different ways there. One never knows. so many prognosticators on the air today. It's interesting to look. Yeah, have you ever noticed when you're listening to Matthews and Tucker Carlson and all the guests they have on, have you ever noticed how many times they're wrong? Have you ever noticed that, in fact, Matthews is wrong most of the time? Here, this guy is touted to be a genius, a political genius, and I think his political acumen is almost zero. And I hunted down a few quotes and found some of this on Media Matters, by the way, that would seem to say that Tweety Bird Chris Matthews is not all that smart when it comes to politics, or that his political instincts certainly aren't all that great. He was listening to Bush speak a while back. I think it was June the 15th, 2006. And he said, with all of his problems, Giuliani is the guy who may well be the perfect candidate to replace Bush. The perfect candidate. And let's look at some of the things he said. Southerners can't spell his name necessarily, but they know Rudy was a hero. And on May the 2nd of 2007, Matthew said, he looks like a president to me. And let me see, October the 18th, he said, that's what I began hearing several years ago. The Southerners look to Giuliani as a leader, and Republicans, as we all know, love leaders. Watch for Rudy to surprise the pundits and pull pretty good numbers down in Dixie. Well, it didn't happen, Chris. And back in November the 6th of 2007, Matthew said, Giuliani is the person with the best shot to win the Republican nomination. And he said that without reservation. Rudy is this tough, kick-butt cop from New York. You know, he's not a nice guy. You know he can be an SOB, but maybe that's what you want on the subway at 3 o'clock in the morning. Again, Chris Matthews. Another quote from Matthews, he's got the kind of demeanor and the toughness I think will make him a success as mayor, and I think will make it, that made him a success as mayor and will make him a success on the campaign trail. And again, he said to the mayor himself, you know, mayor, for months now, I think I've been one of the troubadours for you out there in terms of your prospects. I've always seen the Giuliani advantage in a party that treasures leadership. And on January 22nd, Matthews claimed Giuliani hasn't been beaten yet, despite having been crushed in all the Republican primary contests held up to that point. Well, 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 Tweety, seems you didn't know very much of what you were talking about on Rudy Giuliani now, did you? I don't think so. But it is fascinating how people watch these shows and think that these guys are some sort of wise old sages that know what's going on all the time, and yes, they do have some inside information, but mostly, and I can tell you this for a fact, mostly they sit around and talk to one another in the coffee shops and in the studios, and that's where they get their ideas. So much for him being a genius. And Carlson's the same way. Carlson's very often wrong. And many of their guests are very often wrong. I began to, Powerpuff says on the chat room, Matthews is a dork. I agree. I can't disagree with that statement. I cannot. Don't like the guy. Don't know anybody who does that knows him in person. Speaking of somebody I don't like, Ralph Nader is backing the Republican candidate for the presidency. And he said, well, he's back. Yes, since he's entering the race, he must want another George Bush. He gave us one Republican loony. He can give us another. If you all remember, Ralph Nader said then that there was no difference between Bush and Gore. But I would remind you that there were and there remain huge differences. And the future of our country and of the world have been radically altered because of those differences. I truly believe he did cost Gore the election. That's not to say that Gore ran a good campaign, because he did not. And it's that old argument, well, he couldn't carry his own state. No, he did not. But had Ralph Nader not been in it, I still don't think he would have. I think Gore would have won the presidency. But it's a shame that Nader's thinking about getting back in it again. I would love to see him just go away, just go away. Him and Lyndon LaRouche, just LaRouche, go away. Don't do it again. He's on an ego trip once again. I don't like it. And if you've been watching the news, you've seen that Congressman Davis, Republican congressman from Virginia, is resigning from Congress. Another Republican who's jumping ship because the bilges are filling up with water and they don't like to be in the minority. It's no fun being in Congress if you're in the minority. Big power trip if you're in the majority. But they see what's coming and they don't want to be blamed for it, even though they are to blame. And these Republicans will be replaced by Democrats. And I think there's 28 seats up for grabs. 28. And they'll be replaced by a lot of Democrats, and that's where the problem begins. I'm just cynical enough to think that this just might be the biggest political setup in our history. Because the economy, and I am this cynical, really. The economy's tanking, and look who's going to be occupying Washington when it finally does hit bottom, and we're a ways off from that yet. We're nowhere near the bottom. And when that happens, what do you think is going to be the reaction of the almost total right-wing controlled media? What do you think will be the reaction? That's right. They'll blame every single bit of it on the Democrats. Why? Because they can. Because they can. No, you say that couldn't they couldn't be that devious, really? You don't think the Republicans could be that devious? They outed Valerie Plame, a covert CIA operative. I'm just trying to think of a few. They lied to Congress about the missing emails. They started a war simply because they wanted to, and they manufactured the evidence to do it. Sent Colin Powell in to tell the massive lies to the UN, and you don't think they'd run from a sinking economy that they caused and blame it on the Democrats? If you do think that, you must have been born yesterday. And whomever's in office when the crash comes will get the blame. And it won't be the Republicans because they're dropping out in droves to wait for better political times. They'll be back. Oh, yeah. They'll bide their time and they will return to snatch some more of your money. That's what happens when they come to town. I think most everybody's realized that by now, on our side of the fence anyway. And things are really getting ugly on the economic scene in the U.S. right now. I see the stock market's up 175 points today. Oh boy, that helped you out a lot, right? But the future's bleak. It's very bleak. And here we had Bernanke in the past 2 weeks, dropping interest rates, what, 1.25%? That's the old deal, like having to hang a pork chop around the kid's neck to get the dog to play with him. That's pretty much the way it is with the market right now. The borrowing and spending has put us in a hole we just might not be able to get out of. It's not like the old days. We don't owe our souls to the company store. We owe them to Japan and China and the Saudis. And Republicans know who's responsible for the problems. And they're getting out of Dodge. Through their policies and their tax cuts and all, they've shifted massive amounts of wealth from the middle class over to the wealthy, to the few. And really, their job is done for now because there isn't much more loot for them to take right now. Certainly not from the middle class. There can't be all that many more corporate CEOs left who haven't plundered their companies and taken huge bonuses with them when they left. You know how that goes. Their companies might be in bankruptcy, but they always get their bonuses. The Republicans will just slink away and pretend that the Democrats caused the problem, and they'll wait a while and get on their white horses and ride into town again in the future sometime, and save us from those evil Democrats, right? Those tax and spend Democrats. That'll be the story. Let's predict it right now. not to be too depressing, only the people that look out for all of the people can get our nation through a tough recession. And it's not done by huge tax cuts for the millionaires and the billionaires amongst us. Our nation will get through the coming recession by legislation that looks more to the interest of where the majority of the people are in the middle and the lower classes. That's not the favorite group for the Republicans in any political speech. I guess you know that by now. And that might just be why they're bailing out of public services in droves. And when the economic glass isn't even half full, we need leaders that think in terms of hope and not the Republican mantra of what's in it for me. And I think you know, and they know, the millionaires and the billionaires, they'll ride out this storm. They'll ride it out, but you and I will face the full storm and what a real recession is. And in 8 years from now, the speeches about your lot in life, is it better now or 8 years ago, will rise up from the Republican fat cats, and they'll promise you the world, never having felt a bit of the pain themselves from the recession. And just like the post-Great Depression days, the party of change is the Democrats' hand, and they'll need to prove their steel in this one. They really will. 866-546-5254. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, Sandra, how are you?
Good.
Listen, why are they about to bump up the income of these people they're going to throw the pennies to? You heard about that, right?
I'm sorry, you're breaking up on me here.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Oh, I can hear you, okay. There's a lot of static.
Oh, God. Anyway, you know this stimulus package?
Yes.
Aren't they now talking about giving the rebate to people who make $300,000 a year?
Oh, I don't know how far up they were going to take it. I know they were going to start it with people at, what was it, $3,000? You had to make at least $3,000 to get it, and I don't know how far up they were planning on taking it.
Well, my thing is, I don't understand why they're not, you know, increasing food stamps and extending unemployment. I mean, that's kind of straight economic, you know, it's pretty economic 101. Those tax rebates for businesses, that's not going to kick in until, you know, months from now, if ever, or maybe they'll build a plant in Thailand. I mean, I don't get it.
Well, you're right, and, you know, our guest the other day, Dr. Heidi Hardman, she was saying that food stamps and unemployment, extended unemployment benefits would be immediate. That was something that would help, you know, they could get it into the system almost immediately, and it would be of great help and be going exactly where it's needed.
Well, I mean, yeah, because I remember having a big discussion in our class about how, well, because people who don't work, if they have income coming in, they're going to spend that immediately. Because, you know what I mean? It just seems to be sort of commonsensical as opposed to business credits. Maybe they'll use it to upgrade their, you know, equipment. I mean, who knows what they're going to do with it? You know what I mean? It's not a stimulus.
And as we mentioned yesterday or day before, you can give the business all this tax stimulus you want, and they can do all the upgrading that they want. They can improve their production facilities. They can improve all sorts of things in their businesses. But if consumers don't have the money to buy their product, it's just not going to be doing a whole lot of good. The money's going to stop right there.
Right. It's just sort of, it just shows me how far away from, you know, what is important to working people that they cannot, you know, change a basic thing like the unemployment insurance and food stamps, that they feel afraid to even do that.
Well, and it is something they could turn on a dime.
It just really pisses me off. It's like, you know, this is some sort of joke, and, you know, they're just sort of treating the American people like idiots. You think $600 is going to make any GD difference with this mess?
It'll buy some votes, though, won't it?
It's so much bigger than that, and
yeah.
I'm just sort of, you know, I just think, I know we're stupid, but, you know, we're not that stupid.
Oh, I think we are. I think many of the American voting public is probably a little bit more naive and foolish than we realize.
Well, I am just sort of terrified by, you know, what things to be pending, because the financial markets, they don't seem stable. I don't care if the stock market is up today. That don't make a hill of beans difference to us down here.
No, it doesn't. And of course, the other thing to go along with it, gold hit a new record today at 931 or something, right in that neighborhood, and that's an ominous thing when gold is up that high. That shows you what a lot of the people in the know really think of what's happening to the economy when gold gets that high.
Well, yeah, no, I didn't know it had breached well into the 900s. Yeah, that is disturbing. I just have sort of, and then another thing that's really getting to me is this whole John McCain thing. I mean, his biggest constituency is the media, because who wants this guy in office except for them? I'm sorry, I don't believe what I'm seeing with my eyes. I just, you know, because he's some 72-year-old crazy.
Yeah, a war hawk and a man with a temper that they tell me is uncontrollable at times. He's a man who's forgotten his roots. He became liberal for a while, not anything he would call liberal, but he did in his original race against Bush. But then, he became Bush for this election, and then it's amazing the metamorphosis of both of the candidates on the Republican side right now. They've both done a great bit. I mean, it's a shame that John Kerry got the moniker flip flopper put on him, because he's nothing in the way of a flip flopper compared to McCain and Romney.
No, but the media is already, you know, sort of framing McCain as, you know, this great threat, you know, to the point where we're supposed to believe that this fool can actually win the White House?
Yeah, well, they seem to be on his side right now, and of course they're figuring Hillary's going to get it, and if Hillary does get it, you're going to see the worst media onslaught against her that you have ever seen. It won't be just the Republicans against her; it'll be the media as well.
No, I realize that, and I just, every time I look at McCain, I see the sort of pass that he's gotten from the media for years, not just now. You know, isn't he a part of the whole Keaton Five?
Oh yes. Absolutely.
And, I mean, I'm just sort of, you know, because everything seems to have switched as far as the media goes. Now they're talking as if the Republicans once again have a chance for the White House.
Well, I still don't think they do. I could be wrong, and I know polls being what they are shows this candidate and that candidate. But when it comes down to the nitty-gritty, I do have enough faith. God help me, I do. I do have enough faith left in the American voter that by the time we get down to nitty-gritty in November, that everybody will have a full realization of what the economy really is and what's really happening in Iraq. And we've seen lately some backtracking on this great surge that they put over there. So I think by then everybody's going to understand what the real story is and take it to the polling to polls with them, and we'll end up with a Democrat in the White House. I'm absolutely convinced of that. I really am.
Oh, no. I am, too. The only point I'm trying to make is it's just so insipid when you just sort of, if you're a watcher of the media, you know, which I am when I can stomach it, and it's just so wrong how they latch on to their little favorites, you know, because I think, no, most people are. There's no way they want four more years of Republican White House rule. You know what I mean?
No.
I understand what you're saying. I just am sort of, you know, I don't know. I'm just wondering, they're not going to have enough delegates on Tuesday to shake out the Democrat nominee, though, right?
I don't think so. You know, I started into that today to take a look at the 20 states and figure out which ones were winner-take-all and all the different formulas. Oh, my God. You talk about something tough to do. You take all the states that are in the running on Super Tuesday and figure out which ones have you know, this many percentage of delegates going to the winner, and it gets pretty deep.
Yeah, well, I don't like the whole super delegate thing and all the inside crap that, you know, the Clintons are going to pull out all the stops, because, you know, I don't know. I understand that campaigning is what it is, you know what I mean? But I'm not too sure. You know, I just think it's going to be really a little bit more difficult for the Democrats to win in November if if she's, you know, the nominee.
Well, I have confidence that they will win. I'm just absolutely sure of it. I'm not even, to tell you the truth, maybe I'm completely wrong here, but I am not even worried about it. I'm really not.
Well, you think, like I said, I'll vote, you know, for Hillary, of course, but I don't know. I just, not that I'm a huge Obama person, but, I mean, don't you have some issues with the dynasty aspect of it? I mean, the Clinton Bush. I mean, I know it's an old sort of rant.
If I had my druthers, certainly I do. I have issues with that. But I also know that, as I've always said, I have issues with every one of the candidates, but I keep looking over to the other side of the fence, and that's enough to make me win and pull the lever for whichever one of our candidates get, whether I agree with them 100% or not. And never going to get one that agree with 100%, that's for sure.
Oh, no, I know. You know, I have to stress that, you know, yeah, I will vote for Hillary. I don't know. I just am feeling a bit uneasy. Maybe it's just the primaries or something, but... You know, I don't, because McCain was thought for dead a couple of months ago, and all of a sudden, there he is now.
Well, it makes a good story, doesn't it? And the media is just going to beat on that and beat on that until it won't be beat anymore. I mean, he's the darling of the press right now, the comeback kid, Jim Mack is back, all this. It makes a great story, and you know, anything that'll push the news for him, that he's the darling of the moment, and that's the way it's going to be for a while.
No, but what about his, you know, he has that never-ending skin cancer. He's 72. I'm sorry. There's some issues with me with McCain. It's like, and he wants to go to war, like, it seems like day one when he gets into power.
Never saw a war he didn't like. It's okay with him if we stay in Iraq for 100 years. He in fact, pretty much said that. So.
Oh, well, let me let you go. This phone is sort of doing my head in. Have a good evening or day.
Thanks for your call.
Bye.
John McCain, he is the darling of the press right now, is he not? He most certainly is. They just love Johnny McCain right now. Wow, are they happy. but, I think it is simply ironic that McCain has forgotten his roots and he did become more liberal in politics. He really did. And actually, both front runners play the game, but in the end... when you think about it, result isn't about the people in either of their messages. It's about the power of the presidency for them alone. And let's face it, and let's be real here, and let's admit to ourselves, that's what it's about. It's the power of the presidency for them. That is not what the presidency is all about. We elect our president based on our opinions and our life situation, and we do not elect them on why they demand our vote. And in the days to come, we need one of our candidates to have the conviction of Roosevelt and Kennedy. Messages like those, the real messages of change. And those are some people that did have some tremendous change in the country, affected real change. And we need a political light that we can follow through this darkness of some hard times that we're facing right now. We need a dynamic leader who will forsake the normal selfishness of politicians and unite us all as a nation to get the American people through what I think is going to be some pretty difficult times. And I'm not naive enough to think that one politician is America. But one president at the right place and the right time can really make hope and change a real possibility. And you can't bind hope in any political message or advertisement, but right now we need a leader who will promise, and not just promise, but we need a leader who will deliver hope and lead. And hope is just what it means. It isn't about fear of war. It isn't about fear of terrorist attacks. And it isn't about who did what in the past. It's about our nation's future. And hope is definitely not about a flag-draped casket coming home from Iraq or Afghanistan. That was George W. Bush's idea of hope. And it isn't working out so well, is it? Certainly not. 866-546-5254. Let's hear from you. We'll be right back.
Round up the usual suspects.
Hi, boys and girls. This is Rick Goodner, part of the Weekend Wrecking Crew. And I'm here to tell you that you cannot miss Billy Shears. The man knows his music. The man knows what you're thinking. Tune in and listen. You'll be surprised. He's going to play the very song that you were thinking that you needed to hear. He's a genius. Maybe a bit psychic. I promise you. Tune in on the weekend, listen to Billy Shears Night Sounds, and you will hear the song you've been waiting to hear. And you'll enjoy your time as much as I do. Right here on the Horn Head On Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss what you've been waiting to hear with Billy Shear.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Play as time goes by.
Well, I was born in a small town, and I live in a small town. Probably die in a small town, oh, the small communities. And all my friends, it's a small town. My parents live in the same small town. My job is a small town, provides little opportunity. Educated in a small town, taught to fear Jesus in a small town. Used to daydream in that small town, another boring romantic, that's me. But I've seen it all in a small town, had myself a ball in a small town. Buried an L.A. doll and brought her to this small town. Now she's a small town, just like me. Oh, I cannot forget from where it is that I come from. Cannot forget the people who really love me. Well, I can be myself here in this small town. And people let me be just what I want to be. Against a big town, still hayseed enough to say, look who's in the big town. But my bed is in a small town, oh, and that's good enough for me. Well, I was born in a small town, and I can breathe in a small town. Gonna die in a small town. Oh, and that's probably where they'll bury me. Well, I was born in a small town, and I live in a small town. Probably die in a small town. Oh, and that's
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. I see walking into the studio the official Guy James Show mascots, Sophie and Koopa, the famous Yorkies. Ah, lots of fun those puppies are. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to give us a call. Did you watch the debate? Oh, my. You know, I take notes. I kind of score it like a baseball game, you know. I'm always kind of a sports kind of guy. And I made a few notes last night. It was kind of a non-event, a little snarkiness back and forth between McCain and Willard Romney and a stand-up comedy line or two from the huckster, but that's about it. As far as them individually, I really thought McCain looked kind of weak and small and petty with some of his arguments. He was mean-spirited, which is nothing new for John McCain, which, you know, I understand that's his true nature. He had some of his facts about Willard Romney wrong, but that's okay. In these kinds of debates, does anybody really care? And Romney always, to me, I hear people talking about what a great communicator and debater he is. I don't agree. I think Romney looks like a fish out of water. He was desperately trying to answer charges from McCain, and he didn't look good doing it. And he appeared frustrated, and he probably is. You'd be frustrated, too, if you had spent millions of bucks out of your own pocket to buy the U.S. presidency and you were failing. And it's not over yet. But it's not looking any better for Willard Romney than it did for the last famous Willard that we all remember. And I'm not talking about Willard Scott either. Huckleberry, a sideshow. He's always full of little platitudes and funny lines and, you know, plenty of rehearsed lines, which sound rehearsed, by the way, don't you think? He just sounds rehearsed. And, you know, he's done. He's cooked. He's finished, as he ought to be. And don't forget, Huckleberry is the fair-haired boy of Kenneth Copeland. And that ought to do it for you right there. That ought to do it. And that leaves Ron Paul. And once again, he was a fish out of water, flailing and flopping around all over the place. He was largely ignored, as he should be. And I wonder what it'll do with all the money he has left over that was given by the idiots who worship him. What do you think? Maybe he'll give it to some deserving minority in inner-city schools. Yeah, he loves the minorities and he loves the inner-city schools, both. So that was my opinion of what happened in the debates last night. And we'll talk about each of those candidates a little more a little later on. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Sarge. How you doing, my friend?
Hi, Sarge. How are you?
I'm doing very well. In fact, I wanted to call and give you a little report here. I was fortunate enough to get a chance to attend a Barack Obama event last night with Barack Obama there, Caroline Kennedy, and our governor here, Napolitano.
Mm.
And it was very good. It was very interesting. The seating capacity for the place that he was at is 14,000. And there was at least 13,000 there and probably up to close to 14,000. It was just a packed house.
Wow.
And now Hillary Clinton was here last week, and she only drew around 10,000 as compared to almost 14,000 mm-hmm. for Obama. So that was quite startling, seeing how she's supposed to be a heavy favorite here in Arizona. Now, what was really interesting, the crowd was really enthusiastic. It was a very diverse crowd. There was people, young people, old people. There were blacks, whites, Latinos. It was just a very, very diverse crowd, and the people were enthusiastic. I talked to a lot of people at the event, and they were just really excited. Obama did address a few issues that he doesn't normally, you don't hear him address, and he talked about different things that he's involved in, and three of the things he really mentioned was, one, he wanted to get the troops out of Iraq starting in 2009 when he takes office. Another thing is he wants teachers to start getting paid properly. And another issue was veterans care that he spent a lot of time on. And I guess I should add in there, he also talked a lot about oil companies making too much profit and getting into more renewable sources like solar energy, wind energy, and things of that nature. Very impressive.
Well, he is an impressive guy, isn't he? And he does know how to work a crowd. He's very good, very good. I've saw him last year once, and you're absolutely right, Sarge. He knows how to work a crowd. He knows how to excite them and bring some enthusiasm and project the hope that the message that he's preaching.
Well, one thing he said, guy, that was really interesting, and we all got a good laugh out of this, but he said this year there won't be any George W. Bush on the ballot, and my cousin, God forbid, Dick Cheney won't be on it either. So he was really funny with that. And he also really came across, the crowd just really ate him up. And he made some really good statements. And he said, they tell me I need more seasoning, that I hadn't been around long enough. And you're too optimistic, too naive with all this hope mongering. And
hope mongering. That's a good
one. I thought that was a real good reply for his experience.
and the cousin thing. Yeah, where did I read that the other day? He's like Cheney's 11th cousin or something down the line.
yeah, he really made a big joke out of that. And
if I were Barack, I don't think I'd mention that.
he made it really funny.
Yeah, I wouldn't want that Cheney in my family tree.
I tell you something else that I found out about the Barack campaign. I've been communicating with him, for my radio show, and they are really interested in progressive talk. And they're making arrangements with me to come on my radio show, and of course I'm going to try and get them on the horn too.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
I feel a lot better about Barack. After yesterday and talking with this campaign the last couple of days, I believe this man is the legitimate deal.
Well, he's got a shot. That's for sure. He's certainly got a shot. I haven't endorsed anybody this year, but I'm going to be pleased to go in and pull the lever for whichever one of the candidates wins. And I think the world and all of Barack Obama, and I like Hillary as well. Barack's done some things that that I really don't like. Hillary's done some things I really don't like, and
that's, well, you're not going to find the perfect candidate, are you?
No, certainly not. I mean, I was steamed at Barack a couple of weeks ago for the statements he made about Reagan, and I didn't misconstrue what he said. He did try, and I know what he was doing. He was pandering to, but that's what politicians do. But I got over it in a day or two.
Well, we have this guy at our station, Joe from Tempe, who is a real nutball, but here lately. And this is due to Obama. He's really started making sense, and he's starting to talk more in terms of what's right for the country, and he's saying things that we've been trying to drill in his head for years out here. And for some reason, it seems like Brock's reaching across to these guys. And in a way, that's encouraging because, it's going to take everybody in the nation working together and maybe heal some of those divisions.
Well, I hope. I don't know. I don't have a lot of hope for healing them, but we shall see.
Well, look, I appreciate you giving me the time, Guy. And if you don't mind, may I mention my radio show when it comes on and off?
Go right ahead.
Okay, it's on. You can stream it at KPH 1480kphx.com. It's called the UnreportedNews.net show on Sunday mornings at 10:00 Eastern Time.
All right.
Guy, thank you so much, and y'all keep up the good work over at Horn.
Thank you, Sarge. Good to hear from you.
Bye-bye.
Sarge, out to Phoenix Way, by way of Mississippi and Alabama. Now he's in Phoenix. So, just was out in Phoenix. What was it, December? I forget. Maybe October. time goes by pretty fast. A lot of people thinking McCain might win the nomination now, away from Romney. What do you think? I think he will. And the reason that I think he will is they don't have anybody else. And the reason they have no one else is because they've got nothing. The GOP's running on fumes. This is the worst slate of candidates they've ever had. And let's face it, they have no rabbits left in their hat. They brought out Fred, for God's sake. He was going to be the savior. Fred was going to save them. And we all know how that turned out. And we've been hearing off and on that Newt was going to get in the race. Well, I don't think Newt's going to get in the race. I think they all see now that it's not going to happen for him this year. And I think he'd be kind of silly to... I mean, McCain, I don't blame him. This is his last shot. You're 72 years old. You're out wanting to run for the presidency. If you're 72, you better take your shot while you got it. You're not going to get another one, I don't think. Unless the Republicans run another slate of candidates the next time, he might get the nomination again. But, I understand him taking his shot right now. Romney, I don't necessarily understand why he'd want to spend a lot of money on this campaign, because it's a loser for him. No matter how you look at it, it's a loser. And I know a lot of the right-wingers are sitting back saying, you just keep saying it. Well, I do feel that way. I do feel that there's no way, no how, not going to happen that the Republicans are going to take the White House this year. Not going to happen. So we shall see. 866-546-5254. See the market really going wild, up 252 points. 252 points up today. So I've gotten rich off of that. How about you? 866-546-5254. I do think that this Republican coalition, the Reagan coalition that they like to call it, is fractured. Hannity's beloved Giuliani's out of the race, and like I said, Fred Thompson, who was regarded as the savior of the conservative movement, he sank like a stone, and Huckabee is flailing about and nearly done for. He might have a little influence there, but not enough to get the nomination. Romney is a plastic man, willing to do whatever he has to do to get the Republican nomination, and McCain's morphed into a pseudo-conservative in his own mind, but not in the minds of the Limbaughs and the George Wills and most of the Fox News mavens. So I think they're in a real turmoil. And the question, one of the questions I have is, will McCain get down on his hands and knees and beg Limbaugh to change his mind about him? Like he did with Jerry Falwell. Our dear departed Jerry Falwell. Now, Limbaugh would love that, wouldn't he? Wouldn't he just love that? That Giuliani bowing down before a Falwell. My, what an interesting sight both those were. But Limbaugh would just relish the opportunity to make these people beg. And let's face it, he is a power broker in the Republican Party. But really now, I think all the king's horses and all the king's men really can't put this mess back together again. I just don't think so. So one might think that the right-wing talkers would be losing their audience's share and their income would go down, but there's not a chance of that happening, really. They haven't lost their audience hardly at all, and the money just keeps flowing in by the buckets full. After all, as long as they have the religious right nutcases listening, along with the likes of, I'm trying to think of a good militia man, Ted Nugent, I guess, and his militia pals. They'll have plenty of faithful listeners who go out into the world and parrot the talker's views. And as long as Grover Norquist, my good pal Grover Norquist, is still promising the rich that someday they won't have to pay any taxes, they'll hang in there as well. Saw Grover at breakfast week or two ago, over at last week, I guess, at the Mayflower in Washington. He hangs out there in the morning. That's his office. I think all three of those groups will listen till Limbaugh's drug-addled, ice-cold body's removed from his private palace in Palm Beach. But you see, these kinds of people
need Limbaugh, and they need Michael Savage, and they need Mark Levin and Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and the rest of them to tell them what great Americans they are, because God knows nobody else thinks so. So if you think Limbaugh and his ilk will have some sort of an epiphany and see the light and start talking reasonably and sensibly, you'd better reconsider. They are hoping and praying that Romney can find a way to win this. I don't know. Would you get down on your knees and beg a known drug junkie for his dispensation? Limbaugh's betting on it, I'll bet you. I even heard McCain, I think I heard one of McCain's people say last night, I know I did, said that they were in contact and trying to talk this over with Limbaugh. Well, I heard Limbaugh say, as someone sent me an excerpt from his program, said that if it comes down to McCain and Hillary, that he won't vote. That's your good American right there. That's your guy that's been promoting the American way of life. That's a guy that he's not even a good enough Republican. He'd vote for his Republican candidate, a guy that's a war hero and you know, right in there for cutting taxes and fighting Bush's war. Been with him on a good many issues. That's a good man for you, is that Limbaugh. If it comes down between McCain and Hillary, he won't vote. Well, isn't that a shame? Isn't that just a shame? He won't vote. Well, they'll miss his vote over in Palm Beach. Oh, my. 866-546-5254. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Sing it, everyone, got my eyes, got my face. Sing it, everyone, got my nose, got my blood. Conscience plays upon me now. I'm safe until my luck runs out. Cuckoo's call, the pendulum swings. Thought you knew everything. Lift my hands and make the cross. Sinner, I have never learned. Beginner, I cannot return. Forever, for I must walk this earth like some forgotten soldier. These things I should keep to myself, but I feel somehow strangely compelled. Under moonlight I stood wild and naked. Felt no shame, just my spirit awakened. Sinner, sing it, everyone, got my eyes, got my face. Fireball drop from the sky. All my dreams have come to pass. Where's my faith? Is it lost? I can't see until I cast it off. Sinner, there is no such thing. Beginner, I have learned to sing. Forever, I must walk this earth like some forgotten soldier. To the face that I saw in the clouds, yeah. And the closest I get to contentment is when all of the Jesus, come down, sinner. Got my eyes, got my face, sinner. Got my nose, got my blood. And I must walk this earth. I must walk this earth like some forgotten soldier.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
And you're back here on the Guy James Show. Just, time got away from us there. We're only about 2 minutes and 45 seconds till the top of the hour. Looking at the market, it's the Dow is up 191 points. Was up 250 about 2 minutes ago. So who knows what will happen between now and 4 o'clock. You never know about the old stock market. It can go up fast and down fast. I do hope all the Democratic leaders are listening. I saw a new poll, the NBC Wall Street Journal poll coming out, and nearly a 3-1 margin. Who do you want to see take the lead role in setting policy for the country, George Bush or the Congress? That's the question asked in the poll. The answer is Congress by a 62-21% margin. 3-1. That the American public wants Congress to set policy instead of George Bush. That's just another reason to think that the weakness and the conflict aversion of the congressional Democrats is a huge source of their low approval. They would do well to take a good look at that poll and maybe start wielding the axe a little bit, maybe getting a little political courage. One would think that poll would certainly give them some political courage where they have had none for the leadership I'm talking for a considerable amount of time now. Do you hear me, Harry? Do you hear me, Nancy? Take a look at the NBC Wall Street Journal poll. 3-1, Congress trusted over Bush to set policy for the country. Yeah. I don't know what could give you any more courage than that. 3-1, my God. Oh, my. The first hour has gone fast in the program today. We've got just a few seconds left until we go to news at the top of the hour, so I won't take any calls at the moment. We'll start up again right after the news at the top of the hour, and you can join us then at 866-546-5254. 941-876-6896 if you've got minutes to burn, okay? We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. Don't go away. You listen to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network, Billy Shears, music director. And we'll be back right after the news.
Gisha, an Israeli non-profit organization whose goal is to protect the freedom of movement of Palestinians, especially Gaza residents, is one of the plaintiffs in a suit before the Israeli Supreme Court challenging Israel's fuel cuts to Gaza. South Africa's parliament is set to hold an emergency session as people prepare for a month of blackouts due to severe power shortages. The energy crisis, which analysts fear could severely damage the economy, has prompted opposition parties to threaten a motion of no confidence against Thabo Mbeki, the country's president. George Bush signed a $696 billion Pentagon spending bill, which funds all Pentagon programs not directly tied to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Bush added a so-called signing statement saying he would ignore provisions that ban permanent military bases in Iraq, forbid the use of U.S. troops to exercise U.S. control of Iraq's oil resources, and block two accountability measures aimed at private security firms accused of wartime abuses. Iraq confirmed its reputation as the most dangerous country in the world for journalists this week when a roadside bomb killed an Iraqi television cameraman, Ala Abdul Karim al-Fatursi, the 126th since the start of the war. 104 of the journalists killed were Iraqi, 13 were European and 2 were American. 49 media support workers were also killed. Iraqi workers for foreign media companies are particularly at risk. Khaled Fayed Obaid al-Hamdani was driving fast to avoid kidnappers, but U.S. soldiers suspected him of being a suicide bomber and shot him dead. Many journalists were tortured before they died. Others appear to have been abducted for ransom and killed when it was not forthcoming. Blogger Bev Harris of blackboxvoting.org believes a criminal enterprise is running the New Hampshire primary vote recount. Harris, who helped bring charges against vote fraudsters in the 2004 Ohio vote, said, quote, New Hampshire has the memory cards for 81% of its votes counted by one company, with a convicted felon involved. Harris reported that an observer followed the ballots back to an overnight storage vault and noticed slits in the ballot boxes that had not been counted, a violation of federal election laws. Harris also discovered that the ballot boxes were not being transferred by police as required by law, but by truck drivers. Harris said ballot boxes were unsealed, some weren't even closed, and others had big gashes and tears in them.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show here on a Thursday, top of the second hour, or top of the, well, whatever. It's 5 minutes past the hour. We've got 55 minutes left in the program. We hope you'll give us a call, 866-546-5254. We mentioned earlier on in the program today about healing, and I know that's been a That's been a message from, particularly from Barack Obama, about healing the country. And we are divided. We are terribly polarized right now. I have to be realistic, and do I think that, the political polarization in this country right now that can be healed? Frankly, no, I don't. I think it's here to stay. Despite the country pulling together like we did at 9/11, I still think there's a, deep, deep polarization in the country. Both parties not willing to give in. Well, the Democrats are willing to give in. They have given in. But, you know, playing nice with the Republicans, I think we've seen what that'll get us. I hope by now that Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi have figured out what getting and playing nice will actually get them from the Republicans and get them a smack right between the eyes is what gets them. Tell me why, and I'm just asking, tell me why would the Republicans want to cooperate with you unless you give them the agenda that they want instead of your agenda? Why and how would you get the Republicans to cooperate with you unless you're going to give them exactly what they want, because they never settle for anything less? Cooperation is not something that that's in the nomenclature of the, Republicans. It hasn't been for a long, long time. I think we've had ample examples of that as of late. And, you know, it's all well and good to go out and speak of rallying the country, and you speak of transcending partisanship. I believe I've heard Barack say that lately, transcending partisanship. How do you do that without giving the Republicans every last thing on their wish list? How do you? They've shown that they're willing to settle for nothing less than their way or the highway. So I know that we can convince the Democrats to go out and work and cooperate. I know that you can. Compromise, that's, you know, the art of compromise is always what good politics has been about. But there hasn't been, well, I shouldn't say any compromise, but there's been very little compromise in the past few years in the United States Congress. So I'm really wondering on what basis does a Barack Obama or anybody say that they're, you know, going to heal the party? I don't really see it happening. I don't know. I could be wrong. I hope I am. Again, talking about some of the candidates, I did want to mention, and I want to, a little later, speak a little bit about Super Tuesday coming up. What a big day that's going to be. 20 states. But we saw Romney last night. It was another reminder, and the DNC was letting us know. It's just another reminder of why smooth-talking Mitt Romney keeps racking up what he calls silver and bronze medals. But he just can't seem to make it clear across the finish line. He can't get that gold. After losses in almost every critical state heading up to next Tuesday, Romney's campaign has apparently decided that his last hope is to try and rebrand himself yet again, and this time as an authentic conservative. He sees now that who he's running against is John McCain. He knows the hatred that many of the hardcore conservatives have and the disdain for John McCain. So Romney's latest shtick is, well, I'll try and become the authentic conservative. I wasn't, but that's what they want, so that's what I'll be now. And after all the damage Romney's flip-flops have done to his credibility, I don't think that he wants to hang his hat on authenticity as an authentic conservative. Do you? That just might not be the best way to go. And, you know, the exit polls in every early state have shown that voters who want a candidate who believes just what he says are rejecting Romney. He was the top choice of just 7% of the voters in South Carolina. 7%, he was the top choice. Just 14% in Iowa. Just 15% in New Hampshire. And just 19% in Florida. and even in Michigan, a state where he should have a huge home field advantage. Romney was the top choice of fewer than one out of four voters who wanted a candidate who says what he believes. Well, that doesn't bode well for Willard Romney. This smooth-talking Romney flips and he flops from message to message, and the more the voters see him, the more they see him for the blatant opportunist and the shameless panderer that he is. I don't think I've ever seen anybody as more shameless in his pandering than Willard Romney. And even if he could convince voters to ignore the secret timetable he supported for Iraq or his dismal economic performance in Massachusetts, and you can't call it anything else, Mitt can't hide the fact that a vote for Romney is a vote for another Bush term. He's trying to make himself out to be another Bush, and I believe him. I believe he would be another Bush. Take a look at the immigration issue. You know, in the debate, Romney says, my plan is this, which is for those that have come here illegally and are here illegally today, no amnesty. And he goes on to say, now how to have people return home? Under the ideal setting, in my view, you just say to those who came in recently, we're going to send you back home immediately. Just go back home. Well, he just tells them to go back home and everybody goes. Well, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? That's really workable. And Romney says, I don't believe we're going to round up the 12 or 20 million people and deport them. I do believe we need to have people who are here as aliens register, so we know how many are here and what category, so we can take action based on that information. He said, I'm not in favor of widespread roundups. States should be doing what we're doing in our state, Massachusetts, which is seeking to empower the state police to detain those who are here illegally if they're found in the regular course of business. Well, you know, the state police agency is going to be real happy about that. And when you get Romney talking about the economy, he said during the debate last night, during my term in office, we added jobs. Well, don't they all? When it comes to politicians, did you ever meet one that didn't say he created jobs, whether he did or not? The reality is, during the Romney administration, they had a net decrease of more than 10,000 jobs in Massachusetts. Those are the facts. And those are the facts anyway, according to the Boston Herald. They ought to know. And on climate change, Romney has said, I side with the states making their own decision, even if I don't agree with the decisions they made. He said that in the debate last night. But last March, he said Republicans should never embrace ideas of Al Gore. In a statement, he criticized Republicans for embracing the radical environmental ideas of the liberal left. Republicans should never abandon pro-growth conservative principles in an effort to embrace the ideas of Al Gore. This would be the Al Gore that has the Nobel Prize. It makes you look good, doesn't it, Willard? And on tax cuts, just last night he said, but I'm not running on President Bush's record. President Bush can talk about his record. But Romney, on December 25th of last year, in a speech at the Republican Governors Association conference in Miami, Romney voiced his support for the Bush tax cuts. Romney said, our president bucked the doomsdayers in the Democratic Party and even some in our own party who were telling him he couldn't possibly cut taxes. But he did exactly that. He cut taxes, and why did he do it? Because he was convinced that Americans could do a better job getting this country going than government could ever do, and boy, was he right. Well, turns out that he wasn't right. Now, was he, Willard? So that's the other guy. You've got a choice, folks. On the Republican side, you've got Willard Romney, who doesn't know what the hell he's talking about on any of those issues, and will be whatever you want him to be. He's a world-class chameleon. Or you can have a man who says it's okay to keep our troops in Iraq for 100 years if necessary. Which way would you like to go? That's some choice. Some choice. And after wondering at that, watching that thing last night, I have to wonder, why does Huckleberry stay in this race now? What keeps a guy like him in it? And we've had others over the years that have had no chance. Why is Mike Gravel still hanging in there? Huckleberry a little more prominent than that, but he knows he doesn't have a chance. And why go out and spend more of somebody else's money on a fruitless campaign? Is it merely an ego trip? Is he the designated representative of the evangelical community? Are they using him as a tool to gain a say in what goes on at the convention? I mean, to be sure, he did help McCain win Florida. There's no question about that. Up in the Big Bend area, that's up there near the Panhandle, folks, where the state bends, and along the Redneck Riviera, that's what we call it, up in Pensacola and other places up in the Pensacola and Panama City, the Redneck Riviera. That's because when you go up there in the summertime, you see all the cars from Arkansas and Georgia there, and Alabama and Mississippi. But he got a lot of votes in that area, which otherwise would have gone to Romney. So he hurt Romney bad in Florida. Probably not enough to win it for him, though. Romney lost by almost 100,000 votes here. And there doesn't seem to be any love lost amongst any of the remaining Republican candidates. Romney is not well liked by anyone that I know. And many people who are voting for him are casting their ballots in his favor as an anti-McCain gesture. Many hate McCain. And I'm still not exactly sure why that is. Are you? Do you understand it? I have seen several of the pundits on TV, wrong as they may be, but they don't understand that. I mean, he's the number one surge guy, and they all love the surge. And you have to wonder, is it just because of the McCain-Feingold? I mean, that's an odd bunch. An odd bunch. If they're going to hold it against him being for campaign finance reform, God knows we need that, and I would think both parties want it. They don't, but they should. I don't know if we'll ever have real campaign finance reform, meaningful, where we really keep the lobbyist out. I was going through that list of lobbyists again today that have bundled money for all the campaigns. You see the same names over and over and over again. Same names around Washington, D.C. that wield power. They end up in this campaign, that campaign. They ended up, like we talked yesterday, with the ambassadorships. They end up with high appointments. It's sickening, it really is. And I did see one news item today. You know how I always talk about Mr. Bush. Well, he has set an all-time record. And he may not be the smartest president we've ever had, or the most popular, or the most admired, or the most successful. But there's one thing no one can take away from the man, one achievement of his that I believe promises to stand as a presidential record maybe forever. And he wins the prize for doing more signing statements than any president ever. And he's probably signed more, had more signing statements than any president that there will ever be, because he hasn't just set new records, he's smashed the old records. In his first 7 years of his presidency, Bush has signed 151 signing statements in which he sought to casually divorce himself from a staggering 1,149 provisions of law. And this is more than all the other 42 presidents combined. Junior found a niche, didn't he? And for some reason, he'd gone into kind of a hiatus from it. There were no signing statements for practically a whole year. And then he started up again in December 2007. So 151 signing statements. That's gotten him around 1,149 provisions of law. Sad statement that the White House is able to wield that kind of power. We'll be back.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above the only sky. Imagine all. Nothing to kill or die for.
Looked at the intelligence, and it saw a threat.
Very funny.
Tell us what you think. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
Welcome back to the program. I was just taking the opportunity to look over some email there during the break, and I'll answer back to some of you through email, but John wanted to remind me, and he's exactly right. When we get somebody doubting how we should vote, whether or not there's a difference between the parties, does it make a difference? said when you get callers, will Hillary or Obama veto health care for children? Will Hillary or Obama veto national health care? Will Hillary or Obama veto a congressional approval withdrawal of Iraq? Appoint possibly two Supreme Court judges? Or let these free trade agreements continue? I think those are all good points. No matter what you think of our two candidates, if you're not absolutely enthralled with them, ask yourself those questions. And I think those are important questions to be asked. 866-546-5254. You know, I was thinking maybe someone did remind me this. I do try and get cuts from some of the right-wing programs and listen so I know what's going on. And maybe the Republican conservative voters aren't as nutty as the Limbaughs and the Hannitys and the Laura Ingrams and, you know, that whole crowd, George Will and Morton Kondracki and Britt Hume and O'Reilly. Maybe the Republican voters don't think taxes should be zero for fat cats. You ever wonder? Maybe many of the Republican voters think some sort of amnesty for illegals would be okay if our borders were sealed up better. You know, these are things where you can compromise. And really, I haven't talked to too many Republicans who are holding the McCain-Feingold legislation against McCain. That's one of the things that has me baffled about the hatred from the far right against McCain. Actually, a lot of Republicans like that bill. And I also know that some conservatives, I know some conservatives who believe global warming is a real concern. I'm not entirely sure, but I think maybe the Republican base might not be as crazy as the right-wing media people. But then Limbaugh and friends are not real conservatives when you stop and think about it. They just aren't. Radically restructuring government to create an unaccountable executive like we have in the Oval Office right now isn't conservative. And building a security apparatus that's designed to spy on our citizens, that's not a conservative principle at all. You know, they always talk about less government. That's not a conservative principle, all the FISA and all that. Runaway spending and huge bloated budgets like we've had, those are not conservative ideas. And I know for damn sure, torture and permanent aggressive wars are not conservative principles. Fear-mongering and keeping the people scared is not a conservative principle. And you can go on and on and on with these things. So it may be that the fact of the matter is that these loudmouth conservative pundits just aren't very conservative at all. Definitely something to consider. I've never thought they really are. Loud mouth, to be sure, but I've never thought they're terribly conservative. I didn't want to talk today about Super Tuesday. Next Tuesday, we've got Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Georgia, Idaho, Illinois, Kansas, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Missouri, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, North Dakota, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Utah. Let's see if there's any more. I think that's all for next Tuesday. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. I think that's 24 states. I was thinking there was only 20. But there are several of those that are caucuses. Alaska's a caucus. Colorado's a caucus. Idaho's a caucus. Kansas is a caucus. Minnesota is. New Mexico is. North Dakota is. And we've got some mighty big states in there with some huge delegate counts. got Illinois with 185 delegates. The polls kind of make it look like, not make it, the polls do say that Illinois is going to go for Obama. We would expect that. Other states of note in there, New York, 281 delegates. The polls favor Hillary Clinton right now. Tennessee with 85 delegates. The polls favor Hillary Clinton right now. Utah and Kansas and Georgia, Connecticut, Arkansas, the polls are all too close to call there. But Alabama with 60 delegates is currently, Hillary Clinton has a nice lead there. Arizona's got she's got a pretty good lead there. California, 441 delegates. Clinton is leading there. Clinton is leading in Delaware. Clinton is leading in Massachusetts with 121 delegates. In Minnesota, in Missouri, in New Jersey, in New York, I said that, Oklahoma, and Tennessee. So, I didn't count those up. You need 2,025, is it, to win? I think I have that right. And I don't think that anybody's going to end up with that many on that day. But the polls here right now for that day show this to be a little bit lopsided. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 of those states, 12 of those states in the favor of Hillary Clinton, and 4 or 5 for Obama. So it'll be interesting to see. It's going to be a fascinating day. You can imagine how the pundits are going to be on 24/7 next week. It'll be nonstop politics all day, and we have more primaries coming up after that. Of course, a lot of people think Tuesday, Super Tuesday, is the end of it. It is not. We've got on Saturday, February the 9th, we've got Louisiana, Nebraska, Washington, and the Virgin Islands, and Maine all by themselves on Sunday, February the 10th. The 12th of February, we got the District of Columbia, Maryland, Virginia. Ohio is on the 19th of February, 161 delegates there. Texas is on March the 4th, 228 delegates there. So it's a long way from over. And, well, Tuesday, April 22nd, Pennsylvania, 188 delegates. Will it be decided by then? I'll bet the candidates certainly hope it's decided by by then. I bet they both hope it's decided by next Tuesday, although they're pretty sure that they are realistic enough to know that it's not going to be decided by next Tuesday. That's a virtual certainty. What else did we have here today? Made myself all sorts of notes here today. I see Junior Bush the other day was talking to, he went to Alcoholics Anonymous meeting at an Episcopal Community Services in Maryland. And he got all the steps mixed up, which is step one and which is step two. I admit I don't know, but he was trying to convince somebody who is an alcoholic of what the first step is, and he got it wrong. Georgie ought to know, evidently, about alcohol. He evidently at one time was quite the drinker. 866-546-5254 is the number if you'd like to give us a call. We're heading toward that time in our election once again where you only have to ask yourself one question. And it's all anybody should ask themselves when they go to the polls. And you can be selfish about it. Are you better off now when you win the polls next November? Are you going to ask yourself that question? Are you better off then than you were 8 years previous to that? And I don't care if you're a Republican, a Democrat, a Libertarian, or a guy from Mars. by any conceivable measuring stick you want to name, the country is in no way better off than it was almost 8 years ago. And really, in most departments, not even close. Our national debt has increased from $5.7 trillion when Georgie was sworn in, and they say it'll be $11 trillion by the time he leaves office. Quite a jump. The median household income has dropped. Has dropped in the last 7-plus years. The price of gas was $1.39 when he took office. Now it's $3.07, the national average. The trade deficit has ballooned from $380 billion to $759. I could go on and on and on, and I think you get the point. It's not pretty. Almost by any measure you could name, we are not better off. There ought to be something. And it is true that every president comes into office with, you know, some good feelings. He just gotten elected, just take the office, a new beginning. He got fresh hopes and aspirations. And every president wants to come into office and make his mark, to leave some sort of a legacy that'll be remembered. And every president wants to come into office and leave the country better than it was when he took over. That's the dream, and many have not succeeded in that. And I'm sure Junior Bush, that when he took the oath of office from William Rehnquist a little over 7 years ago, I'm sure he was optimistic that things would be better when he was done, if he cared. That's my question. And when you look back through our history as a country, I think you'll find that with very few exceptions, some people have just gotten caught in bad cyclical situations. But history has a way of sorting statesmen and real leaders from pretenders. And sadly for all of us, this sorry excuse of a human being president has been probably the biggest pretender in the Oval Office since Warren G. Harding. I think there's little doubt of that. And I've never supported him whatsoever. I wanted nothing to do with him being the President of the United States. But when he was elected and he took the oath of office, I'm an American. I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt. And if you're an American, you've got to hope that your president's going to do a good job for the country. So I was certainly hoping that. Nobody wants to see a president fail, especially as utterly and completely as this one has. And as it turns out, probably one of the most sad, absolutely one of the most sad chapters in American history, probably the best thing that happened to Junior Bush. It exposed his administration for the bunch of thugs and criminals that they truly are. We're a little more than 7 years into this now. And I think just recently, just in the last few months, American people have started to wake up and understand what the damage has been to this country. And then the next president, in my opinion, is almost surely going to be a Democrat. They're going to have it tough from the very beginning. They're going to spend, if they're in for two terms, they're going to spend almost the whole first term just trying to undo a lot of the damage that was done by 8 years of corruption and incompetence and just plain stupidity. I think one of the big problems that'll continue, and they'll continue to be a thorn in the side of the next president, is the large numbers of these dominionists and theocrats who have been installed in all layers of government. The government's lousy with them now, and these people can, and they very well might, And you know they'll try just to stifle a Democratic president. Even if he's got a legitimate, or she, even if they have a legitimate mandate to change the way business is transacted in Washington, there'll be people that try and stifle him. So I'm not optimistic that we'll get out from underneath this legacy of Junior Bush for a lot of years to come. And so when you go to the polls in November and you ask yourself, are you better off than you were nearly 8 years ago, you tell me. I think the evidence is absolutely overwhelming. And that evidence can only lead to one conclusion, and that we're not even close to being as well off as we were nearly 8 years ago. We were at the conference last week, the Health America Conference, and we sat in on a round table, and some people asked about this, and so I'm going to play it. It'll take a few minutes. It's the round table discussion with Governor Mark Warner of Virginia, who's running for the Senate now. And we promised a few people we'd play this for you, so we'll do so at this time. This is Ellen Ratner, by the way, from Talk News Radio, who's moderating the whole thing. And again, it's Governor Mark Warner running for Senate now of Virginia, a dynamic, dynamic politician.
And we'll start out with one person per question. If you have time, we'll do another one. And we're going to start out with Guy James from The Guy James Show.
Well, Governor, in this particular year being an election year and with your campaign and so forth, I know I'm from South Florida. I know well the immigration issue. How do you plan on dealing with health care in Virginia? We're hearing people all over the place on this issue. Some, I'm not going to take care of illegals. Yes, we will. We will their children. We want their children. Where do you stand on that?
Well, in Virginia, there's already been a ruling that basically says that folks on Medicaid have to prove their legal status before they get coverage. I think around the issue of immigration, on the overall standpoint, we need to lower the rhetoric a little bit. Clearly, this is an issue of concern. I know communities in my state that, you know, gone from 5% to 50% ESL students over a 4 or 5 year period. That's a challenge to grapple with that. We are going to need to make sure that part of our solution grapples with more border security, does realize that, you know, folks who are here undocumented shouldn't go to the front of the line. Somebody who's been waiting to come into the country legally should still have precedence. We're going to need to make sure that we put some sanctions on employers who hire folks knowingly, illegally, and part of our verification system right now, I think, there's enormous opportunities to rework that. But we also can't, in this debate, throw out the very important contribution that immigrants make to this country. I know in my state, 20% of the businesses, particularly the high-tech businesses in Northern Virginia, are first-generation Americans. And how do we value that contribution? And, you know, part of the hypocrisy in this debate, particularly coming out of the administration, is, you know, they talk tough on this issue, yet they've turned a blind eye for the last 7 or 8 years, and the percentage of employer prosecutions for violating immigration law has, I've seen numbers that have dropped as high as 70%. And how do you not end up, when someone is here, documented or undocumented, though, you know, I've even seen certain people say we're not going to be willing to give emergency services to those folks, and, you know, that's a community-based healthcare hazard. Somebody has got a communicable disease, regardless of the legal status, you need to make sure they get treatment. So my hope is that we can lower the rhetoric and some of the shrillness that particularly coming out of the other side, and let's see if we can sort through an answer.
Warren Ballantyne, syndicated on Radio 1 and Syndication 1. You're next.
Governor, when I look at Virginia, I see two parts of Virginia. I see Northern Virginia, where there's more city life, but I also see areas like Southampton County. And when I see this, and I see the farmers down there, and I know a bunch of farmers down there. A lot of my listeners are farmers. What do you plan on doing to help these farmers? Because right now, they need some help.
Well, you know, the only way I got elected governor of Virginia was by reaching out in a lot of communities that a Democrat hadn't done well in 25 years in rural Virginia, in Southside Virginia, in Southwest Virginia. Matter of fact, I didn't do as well as other Democratic candidates have done in Northern Virginia. And I think the challenge, whether you're a farmer, whether you're a small business person, whether you've been somebody who used to be in the textile industry or the furniture business, which is taking large hits in Virginia, the economy's changing. How do you give that kid in that community at least the choice to stay in the community they grew up in? Now, let me give you some specific suggestions. One, in terms of agriculture, we are going to have to continue to find ways to, and I think with some of the concerns of foreign products coming in around safety, I think there's going to be a renewed sense of, local-based products. I think you're going to see a return to people purchasing local-based products based upon safety concerns, based upon concerns, environmental concerns, for example, of the transport costs. So I think there can be a chance to reinvigorate some of our small farms. Part of that's going to require technology. But if you're going to have that technology component, you're also going to have broadband. America's fallen to 15th in the world in broadband deployment. You talk about a way that you're going to write off huge swaths of our country in terms of having economic opportunity. Now, I'm proud as governor, we had the biggest rural broadband deployment in the whole country going on in Southside Virginia, where we brought some of our tobacco funds, some state funds, some federal funds, and we're providing that kind of opportunity. We've started to see a resurgence in those communities. I think coupled with that, you've got to, on your economic development efforts, again, something we did in our state, was we put a lot more incentive in bringing jobs into those rural communities. In terms of the level of state incentives, and by the end of our term, I think it was close to 75% of our, except for a few mega projects, were jobs being driven to Southside and Southwest Virginia. You've got to make sure you bring the education reforms, and a lot of the area that we focused on was education reform to rural communities. We focus appropriately on some of our urban cities, but we also have to realize that many of the same problems in terms of the quality of teachers and quality of education that exist in the inner city also exist in the small towns. And again, talking politics is cheap. One of the things I was proudest of was, based on our education reforms, Virginia was named the best place in the country for a child to be born in America today in terms of their educational opportunity.
John Elliott from Air America.
Governor, how are you? You have an extraordinary strong record in Virginia, and I'm thinking you don't even have to change the signs because it's going to be Warner and Warner to Warner. It's a privilege to sit with a future senator. So what is the main reason that motivated you to run for the United States Senate? And a two-part question, if you don't mind. What do you feel is your strength that you are bringing to that 100-person body?
I spent 11 months looking at exploring the possibility of running for national office and decided not to go forward at this point. I got three teenage daughters and a wife. The vote was 4-1 against me in my own household.
Probably the last election you've lost.
Well, also, if I wasn't 1,000% sure, I didn't think I should step forward. But I came away from that journey with a real sense that there are such enormous problems that our country faces. We're at one of those, I believe, historic tipping points in our country. We've had half dozen of these in the last 75 years, where our country is going to be challenged to step up and get some things fixed. And we see it in our competitive standpoint. You see it in our declining position in the world. You see it in the very real threat of Islamic fundamentalists. You see it in the threat of our misguided energy policies. The country needs a win. And answering your question in two ways. One area that I would particularly like to focus on is transforming our energy policies, which I think right now can be viewed as, let's go borrow money from China so we can buy oil from countries around the world who don't like us. We may be the first nation in modern history that's literally funding both sides of a war. We put our troops in harm's way, and they've done a remarkable job, yet we're sending north of $250 billion abroad to, again, regimes in the Middle East or in Russia or in Venezuela who are not friends of America. So how do we transform that around the security issue? How do we transform that around job creation? I made my living in telecom and IT. I think that's driven our economy in the last 20 years. I would argue that alternative and cleaner energy development will have as much job creation possibility and wealth creation over the next 20 years as information technology had. We've got to step up and be a leader right there. It also gives us a chance to, I believe, step up on the question of climate change and global warming, which not only will help in terms of environmental, but will help restore our stature in the world. Now, how am I going to do that? The value add I can hopefully bring to the United States Senate is that I'm proud to be a Democrat, but I also believe that the American public at this point
are tired of partisan solutions. I'd love to create a coalition of 10 or 12 bipartisan senators and that would be the radical centrists that would actually be about getting things done, because the issues ranging from energy to competitiveness to our fiscal policies to our standing in the world, a lot of these issues are not going to take incremental change. They're going to take transformative change. And the only way the American public, I believe, is going to buy into that is if they say that it's an American first solution. And in some small way, I believe in my record in Virginia demonstrates some track record of being able to have that kind of transformative solutions.
Syndicated talk show host Davey D, Hip Hop Radio, go for it.
You know, I live in California.
Yes, sir.
And our Richmond, California, was put as one of the most dangerous cities in America. But it wasn't that long ago when your Richmond was also in the same scenario. With that being said, you being a senator, how can you put forth some sort of strategy to eliminate some of these pitfalls that are impacting folks in these inner cities, whether it's Richmond, Virginia, or Richmond, California, which is resulting in people going to prison at high rates or people killing, you know, at
yes,
high
sir.
Rates, et cetera, et cetera?
Yes, sir. Well, I think in one way, and I want to go back again to your colleague's question as well. I think there needs to be a coalition between some of our communities in the inner cities and some of the communities in the rural communities. I mean, what I don't want us to have is an America where we've got these bands of prosperity surrounding an inner city core that's left behind and then wide swaths of a rural community left behind. So how do we grapple with that? You start with jobs. You start with how do you incent moving jobs. Again, I've talked about the rural communities. How do you also incent jobs back into our inner cities so that people have that sense of hope that there is a future for them? Couple that with education reform. I mean, when I was governor of Virginia, we had the largest increase in the country in math SAT scores. We had one of the largest increases in the country in the number of African-American and Latino students taking AP courses. We said we're going to end up trying to change, and I can't speak to Richmond, California, but I can tell you in Virginia, oftentimes we will put our least experienced teachers in our hardest schools, and then if they kind of make it through those challenging couple, 3 or 4 years, they get hired away by a more affluent suburban division, and you got to start again. We had 40% to 50% turnovers in some of our inner city schools.
Yeah, they do that.
Well, we said that's crazy. Let's pay you an incentive if you've got an experienced teacher to go into that inner city school and stay. We picked our 32 toughest schools disproportionately in our inner cities. We said we're going to actually go the extra mile to help these kids. We end up, even with the No Child Left Behind, which dramatically needs to be changed, you know, good idea, poorly implemented, but we ended up, even under the No Child Left Behind standards with these 32 schools, having 18 of them become fully accredited. Because we said that needs to be more than a lip service. We don't have the luxury at this point in America with rising powers like India and China to leave any child behind. You give that child hope in the inner city. You give them educational opportunities. You give them the possibility of jobs. And I believe that they will be a success, but it cannot simply be rhetoric. You got to back it up with action, partnership, and again, I know I'm getting the cutoff here, but I'd be happy to share with you the tangible metric results where we can show the progress we've made. Still more to go.
That's Governor Mark Warner from Virginia, now running for the United States Senator. I believe he'll be a great senator should he be elected, a very dynamic man. Fun to be around, got a lot of great ideas. He'll sit and jaw with you and tell you what he thinks about anything in politics. You don't find that too often. He's quite a guy, and I think when you start seeing him on the national stage, and I believe you will see him on the national stage anyway, he was one of the guests at the Health Action 2008 conference that we attended last week, and wanted to play that audio for you, and we had an agreement with those folks to play that for you as well. We mentioned a few minutes ago about going to the voting booth next November and asking yourself, am I better off now than I was 8 years ago? How about asking yourself if you're even equal to what you were 8 years ago? How about asking yourself if you were in any way close to where you were 8 years ago? The inflation-adjusted median house income in 2000 was $49,000. Last year, it was $48,000. We've gone backwards. There had been an eight-year increase. In the previous 8 years to 2000, to Bush taking over, the previous 8 years, the median income had gone up $6,000. Now the median increase in household income has gone down by $1,000 in the last 7 years of the Bush administration. You can catch a lot of these facts and figures at ourfuture.org. People are, back in 2001 when Bush took over, people were earning 2.3% more than they were spending. Now they're spending more than they're making. The consumer credit debt in 2001 when Bush took over, $7.6 trillion. Now it's $12.8 trillion. Dramatic, dramatic increases in many of these things. The number of Americans living in poverty in 2001, 31.6 million. 2008, 36.5 million. Folks, we're going backwards. Backwards. We have gone backwards for this administration's term. That's not the way America works. America does not go backwards. And I guess the big point is when you go to the polls in November, you have to ask yourself, do I vote for the Republican? Do I vote for the Democrat? Does either one of them care whether we're going backwards? And I think a couple of things I read to you. You want to ask yourself, would the new president, the Democrat, would they veto health care for children? Would they veto a health care program for Americans? I think you know the answer to that. Just all through the line, going through almost all the statistics, college cost up 29% since 2000. Percentage of America receiving employment-based health insurance was 64% back in 2000. Now it's down to 57%. The inflation-adjusted annual cost of family health premium was $7,600 in 2000, and now it's $11,500. Folks, we're going backwards in almost every department. I don't want to say every, but almost every department. The theme of this nation for almost 232 years has been progress. Progress. And I'd ask the question, what kind of progress have we made with this Republican administration of George W. Bush? I think the Republicans have shown over and over and over again that they do know how to get elected, but they don't know how to govern. I think there's little question about that they do not know how to govern once they get in. That's a tragedy for America. It's a tragedy for the minorities. It's a tragedy for people that need health care. It's a tragedy for our elderly. This administration has been a tragedy from one end to the other. And most people who voted for this administration do understand that. Most people do. I can only hope that more of them are understanding in the near future. I do want to thank you for listening to the Guy James Show this week. It's always an honor and a pleasure to be with you, to come into your homes. Appreciate your listenership very, very much. I want to thank Billy Shears, music director. We'll let you know we're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you later, gang.